It's time for Declare Your Independence with Ernest Hancock.
Believe me when I say we have a difficult time ahead of us. But if we are to be prepared for it, we must first shed our fear of it. I stand here without fear because I remember. I remember that I am here not because of the path that lies before me, but because of the path that lies behind me. I remember that for 100 years we have fought these machines. And after a century of war, I remember that which matters most. We are still here! Tonight, let us make them remember. We are not afraid!
No fear here on Declare Your Independence. From me, Ernest Hancock, here in Phoenix, Arizona, from the studios here at Freedoms of the Nest, freedomsphoenix.com, at the farm. That's right, we're on the farm. You know, a lot of the guys, last night, came to the party that some people haven't been here, you know, like Pete and Allison. They haven't really seen our goings on here, so we've had a lot of fun. Here it goes, Sarah. The one thing that I wanted to make sure that we all knew is the inspiration that we're trying to provide for other people doing the same thing. So a lot of times, even though we have a lot of space, we try and grow stuff in a very small area. And Pete was really intrigued by gardenpool.org. You go to gardenpool.org, these guys built an entire biological ecosystem in their backyard. You know, they just covered up a pool, made it like a greenhouse, you know, got fish, vegetables, chickens, water purification, solar pumping, making food. You know, they got two little kids that they've gotten popular enough. Now they want to make a series on cable television with them. So it's like extreme pool makeover kind of deal. We're making some food. And what'd you think was going to happen as we go into the depression, you know, the greatest world depression, they're going to, you know, be relevant by saying, hey man, we can feed ourselves with technology and a little innovation. And here we go. Cool. So I bet that back in the Depression, they wish they had this. They called it chickens. Chickens are easy. Well, there's the reason we have an opportunity to have Dean Pleasant on, because Dean and I, you know, we were these guys 20 years ago. So it's been about 20 years, you know. So 20 years ago, we were these people. We went through the process differently. We didn't have the technology. We had to go for a week training for public access television so that we could get access to the video equipment to go film for one thing that was going to take 2 hours to get the camera and this that we could put into making something that then we had to buy time on television to run it at 7 o'clock in the morning on a Sunday. It cost us hundreds, if not thousands of dollars, depending on what time frame we could get. Then we do papers and we mail out and stuff and telling everybody to record the show on their VCR so that they would have copies. It was cheaper for us to get hundreds, if not thousands of copies of this image done on people having it on their own VCR that they could then copy to distribute to their friends or show to their friends when they came over, for us creating video that we would do that we broadcast on television stations, and now you just do it on your phone on YouTube in real time. This is how complicated and how dedicated we were back then to do that. But now it's just a push of a button. So what kind of multiplier is that? Oh man, big time. That's why we knew what this meant. Because we were them, and we know what we had to go through in order to have even kind of resemblance of the kind of sort of the same thing. As we moved here to the farm, we have right now, Donna, as she has time, and some of the other activists and volunteers are out there in a garage taking all of the accumulated videotape that we had, some audio shows that we've done, you know, printed material, newspapers from back when, pamphlets, brochures, everything that we've done, we've accumulated a couple of samples of over the years, or separated by year, so we can digitize it, document it, copy it, get it on the servers so that it just doesn't go away. It's an historical record. It may be for my great-grandkids, for all I know. It may be for a book, maybe, you know, parts of a movie, maybe just for an understanding of, look, this is how we got here. It was from act, and I'm sure that the people that are doing this now, like Pete says, they keep this information archived themselves, knowing that sooner or later, you know, somebody's going to do the, you know, YouTube flip switch. And even though I don't wish anything bad on, you know, anyone, you know, that they would turn off their videos or race and that kind of stuff, like they've done to various people that have a lot of accumulated stuff, like Alex Jones and so on, Prison Planet and Infowars.com. What we did is we took advantage of them doing that. We'd emphasize it just so it was an educational thing that happened for everybody. Say, look, they did it to him. What makes you think they're not going to do it to you or anybody else that would be to their advantage? They thought, I guess, that they just flip it off and then you don't have it. Well, of course, they just put it right back up. The people downloaded it. They already got it. And the story that they even took it down, heck, is more story than that they just left it. So this is a, you know, a lot of the things that, you know, I have in the back of my mind as we look into the future. Where Dean comes in, he's all about where it really rubber meets the road. Sooner or later, there is going to be those that say you will and the people that say I won't. Something's going to happen. Something's going to break. There's going to be, you know, a bunch of them, and it's kind of been holding off. Like, we have this guy from Las Vegas. You know, you look on Freedom's Phoenix, the front page today, it's all these stories. The Las Vegas Review Journal reported on this guy. There was a burglary at a vacant home across the street from him. He's standing in his driveway with his $3,500 video camera, and he's videotaping. It's like, you know, however long it took, 20 minutes, 30 minutes, whatever. They leave, turn around, shine a light on him. Yeah, what do you want? You know, I'm just videotaping. Ain't no thing. You know, and they beat him up, kicked him in the face, threw him on the ground. And so finally, the officer gets suspended. He's got a history of, you know, shooting two people. So it's, and killing them, you know, yeah, justified, of course. But, and he's only on the force 5.5 years. This guy was rogue gone bad. So they got the videotape of this and everything. This is the kind of thing that we have now to kind of prevent this violent revolution that may be coming. But is it coming? How prepared are we? What's the mindset of the people that are preparing? Well, Dean knows these people. He's a lurker out there on the internet, and they're all talking. They're back from Afghanistan or Iraq, or they wish they could have gone, or they want to play army, or they go down and defend the border against the Mexicans and the drug cartels and the yada, yada, yada. They have a different perspective. Then there are people that are just freedom-oriented. They go, look, man, I don't got to make a big thing out of it and, you know, how big my gun is and pounding themselves on the chest. They just want to be prepared. Another group. Some are more vocal. Some are less. Some are more on the Facebook and out there in the open. Heck, some of them may be government agents enticing people. Come join our thing. Get on the list. I've seen that several times, too. We know when that's coming. So when we, you know, come back, and after the break, we'll get into this, but I want, you know, Dean to kind of whet our appetite just a little bit. You know, help me out, man. Give me the perspective, the lines of the kind of people that are thinking this kind of stuff. And is there a dominant theme out there, and what is it?
Well, the dominant theme is preparedness. You know, when it comes to people who are concerned with gun rights, by and large, they're concerned with gun rights. And as part of that, they're concerned with their general welfare and preservation of it to a greater extent than the average public. And so they tend to read more often and pay attention more often to stories about what could happen. What is the worst case scenario? You know, the end of the world as we know it kind of thing. And a lot of times it's just entertainment for some people, and yet others kind of take a little bit serious because some people who, if they're paying attention, see that, you know, we're a little bit closer to that than we've ever been before. And it's an interesting, always unfolding dynamic to watch. You know, those who say, hey, I think there's really something coming, and others saying, oh, you're ridiculous, you know, and all of that in between.
Well, I remember when you were greatly involved in keeping us apprised of what was happening. I mean, it was hard to, you know, ignore what was happening. We had Waco, and then we had the assault weapons ban. We had Janet Reno was out there taking it. They're going after prosecution of any and everybody that said they were a militia. I mean,
well, you know,
it was real.
It's funny you should mention Waco, because just recently we had like the 18th anniversary of that going down. There's a whole new generation of kids out there who maybe they've kind of heard of it, but they really don't know about it anymore. And I, for one, thought that would never happen because it was such a big deal. And I've actually had to spend the last couple weeks explaining to some young people what that was all about.
Oh, well, Atlas Shrugged got made into a movie. Maybe Waco, the truth. Well, they have some documentaries out there that are very informative. So hopefully It'll never go away. We'll be right back. We'll make sure we keep such things alive.
Freedom's the answer. What's the question? You're listening to Ernest Hancock.
The Eastern world, it is exploding. Violence flaring, bullets loading. You're old enough to kill, but not for voting. You don't believe in war, but what's that gun you're toting? And even the Jordan River has bodies floating. But you tell me over and over and over again, my friend, you don't believe we're on the eve of destruction.
Oh, we on the eve. You know, this is one thing that went through our heads during the 90s. There was a lot of reason to think, man, there was a lot of problems. So we were, you know, and then Y2K came, you know, it's like, you know, and we had reason to be concerned because I had a business that had software that ran, it was called Rapid Fire. And it was the software that, you know, you did your POS, your point of sales stuff, you know, it was the cash registers and so on, it was all computerized. And, you know, they're going, oh, I'm sorry, you gotta pay an additional $800 to get the upgraded Y2K doesn't have, we did two digits, it sucks to be you. And I'm going, you sons of it. Well, fortunately, I knew when I bought the system, I had it documented that I specifically asked for that upgrade. And I had to produce it and be a real butthead. And I got internet. Are you sure you want to play this game? And they gave it to me. But a lot of people, there were, whether it was real or not, but I tell you what would happen, the system wouldn't work. So there was an enormous amount of expense. I didn't think the planet was going to, you know, collapse or anything, but I knew that there were, you know, things that, you know, had some validity that you need to prepare for. It had an impact on the economy because it would have me. I mean, $800 was $800, and I'm going, ooh, I don't want to do that. So fortunately, by having some foreknowledge, you know, we prepared for it. But at that time, there was a lot of reason for us to be concerned. You know, we were Bush, www.warmonger.com Bush, you know, he came in on the idea we're not going to be nation builder. We're going to have a, you know, humble foreign policy and all this kind of stuff. And a lot of us, you know, whether you're in politics or not, at least that rhetoric, we breathe a little sigh of relief. Whew, man, damn, you know, glad that we're, you know, somebody said it. I mean, we're going to, you know, of course, that's not what happened, but we went through this. We had Waco, we had Ruby Ridge, and we had the Oklahoma City bombing. And I remember when that happened, Dean called me. You know, do you remember that?
I do.
You know, you called me, you said, yeah, and we just kind of, you know, and it's on April 19th, the second or third anniversary of it or something.
It was so obvious to me that it was some American who had committed the bombing, and I knew why. It was somebody pissed off at the federal government. I knew that because I hung around in those circles, and it wasn't the kind of target that an international terrorist would have picked. They would have done something like September 11th, you know, something in New York or LA or Chicago, and something that represented a lot of government power. But this was specific to the federal agencies that tend to police us. And I just knew the moment I saw it and heard what the official explanation was that that was wrong. And I suspected that somebody on the fringes of the militia or freedom movement was probably responsible or had been duped into it or something like that. But
there's
there's
always some infiltrator, agent, yeah, but, provocateur guy.
But,
with
you know, for the first
checkbook.
24 hours, I knew that, you know, what they were saying wasn't so. And I called you up. And I said, look, you know, this is what it is. It certainly ain't what they're saying. And then, you know, later on, we were proven right. And then I remember on September 11th, I got woken up by a phone call from you and you said, turn on the TV. You know,
when I first learned of it, a friend of mine called me and he had seen that the tower got hit and he had to go to work. On his way to work, he called me, woke me up, and he said, hey, Ernie, man, you know, the World Trade Center, a plane just flew, you know, turn on the news. So I turned on one of the cable news and I go, wow, both towers got hit. He goes, what? I go, yeah, I'm just watching the second plane live, ran into the second tower. He goes, hey, man, when I left, it was the first one. I go, yep, here we go. You know, mm-hmm. So these things, you're around long enough. You know, a lot of the young activists now, they, a lot of times, they don't even know really what happened on the day of 9/11 or subsequently how the conspiracies in even Oklahoma City. We had a BATF former agent here that was in charge of investigation of fires and explosions, and Rick Shereau. You remember him?
I do.
And he testified before Congress. He was a witness for, you know, the British government came and challenged wrongful death of some British citizens that were in Waco, and all this became a big deal. Well, he, man, they tracked him down big time. I saw him at Sam's Club one time. Hey, Ernie. And I'm like, who the heck is that? He had a full beard and hat and sunglasses and everything. And he goes, I go, Rick? And he goes, yep, I'm a incognito, man. They're after me. So it was an interesting time. I think he writes for Soldier of Fortune magazine now or something.
Well, he wrote a few articles back in the day. I don't think he's writing for them currently, or not for a few years anyway. I don't really know what he's doing. But
hiding, that's all he's doing.
It wouldn't be surprising, because I tell you, there's a website out there, I can't recall it right now, it might be freeatf.org or something like that, but it's a bunch of current and former ATF employees who are very pissed off at their agency, and most of them are wanting to rescue the agency, think it can still be made to be a good thing, but you know, generally everybody who is paying attention agrees, especially these agents, that the people running ATF are
rogue.
Well, they're either rogue or corrupt or inept or all three, usually all three. And there are people who've tried to blow the whistle on that agency from within to try and fix it, trying to do their honorable thing, and they are sorry, and they do what Rick Shereau did. They just leave. They get away. They want to disappear. So I don't blame him at all. I've heard a lot of stories like that about that agency.
Well, he did investigation in Oklahoma City, and he was, you know, he went there right away. He said, no, I know where this is going.
In fact, he was the one who supposedly found the axle gear, the pumpkin gear, from the Ryder truck about two blocks away.
And because he knew that's where you could get a serial number and track this thing down.
Yeah, and he first identified that piece of evidence from which you know, other pieces of evidence fell into play.
So we've been following this for a long time, and during that time, remember Rick Shereau, this is BATF guy, he came down to our workshop and he gave a class on firearms. It was, remember the big, you know, I still have these out there, part of the storage I got back there. He had these big man-sized targets, and it was from a 12-gauge shotgun, different size of shot, that would show what kind of the patterns were and everything. Because this is what our thought process was. We're libertarians, activists. A lot of us didn't have firearms and so on. Now we had one or something like that. We're advocating for, you know, gun rights and such. You know, Dean was the expert on that. And we didn't know where the safety was on AK. You know, you got Arnold Schwarzenegger and True Lies kicking up a wood pallet and a gun pops up and he starts blazing away. And I'm going, heck, I'd be going, click, click, click. I didn't know where the safety is. So we decided, you know, we should at least know a little something. And then, of course, now, you know, everybody and their grandmother has a gun. But back then, we did. So we just go ahead, and, you know, Dean would come and Rick Shereau, BATF, would come and they'd give us classes on just the operation and different attributes of ammunition and all that kind of stuff. This is in mid to late 90s. And the reason is because we were just learning. We understood there was a genuine threat. Against whom? From whom? I mean, what is the real threat, and what should we be preparing for? When we come back, we'll talk about that a little bit, the perception of what the threat was in the 90s, as this generation, our generation of activists, were coming up and preparing for. And we were still doing the activism thing. We were out in the open. All the politicians and press, you know, knew who we were. Heck, probably more than they do now. So then you have this generation. Is that just, they're already prepared? They know way more than we did back then.
And now, live from the studios of Freedom's Phoenix, Ernest Hancock.
Yeah, just another radio show out of Phoenix. Here on Declare Your Independence with me, Ernest Hancock, each and every day on the LRN.FM network, here at Freedoms, with an S, freedomsphoenix.com farm. You know, what we want to do is continue where we left off, and I made some notes that, you know, for Dean and I to get back into this, because, you know, what was PrEP then, in the 9, 10, 15 years ago, and what is it now? has it changed? I need to get my, my survival food gunny, whatever, right after I get my a smartphone. I mean, what are we dealing with? A week from tomorrow, Saturday, the first Saturday of the month is when we have the Arizona Breakfast Club. It's been around 40 years. And we, inherited this from, some great people that wanted us to continue the tradition. And they decided to go with the libertarians instead of the conservatives because they went down dark side. So what happened was we've been able to do a lot of great programs. Well, what we're doing this next week is ham radio. Mutual friends of friend of ours, Tim Weaver, that used to have a company. He made some bank during build up the war in Afghanistan and Iraq because they weren't supplying the troops, and he had a thing called Practical Tactical. It wasn't firearms or ammunition, but it was everything else. All kinds of supplies, for carrying water, ammo, vest, heck, even armor, I think he had some stuff. He just all kinds of stuff. And people were buying it from him to send to their husband, their son, their daughter. It was amazing how little they had in protection. They didn't care. These were all about how much money we can make with the excuse of firing a missile somewhere. So it was upon the soldiers and their family themselves to supply the people over there with what they needed. And he made money doing it. So he's also, involved in, preparations for different things. But so he's the guy I go to that we're going to give a presentation on ham radios. Now, we'll get to that because I want to make sure we talk about that, because communication is going to be a big thing when the bad guys just turn off the DOD, Department of Defense, internet. They go, oh, I'm sorry, it was ours, didn't we tell you? So it's a national security thing, you're not allowed to talk to each other. So I want Dean to, kind of give the idea back when they were, that's what got them in trouble. They were out prepping, getting things and blowing stuff up and, not being as secret as they should have been, and a man came in to make a big giant deal. Oh, see, they're out there, learning how to make explosives and they got to go to jail, conspiring to teach people. Literally, that's what they got it for. So I want to talk about what was considered prep then, and how has it changed to now?
Well, the fact of the matter is that if you're talking, it depends on what future you're thinking you may need to expect. We were concerned for ourselves about potential future conflict with the government for various different reasons. We won't get into those motivations, but with that end result we were concerned about, being able to effectively combat, or at least defend against, in combat, a government. And that's not an easy thing to do. But the very nature of warfare today is warfare is a come-as-you-are affair. It's not like back during the Napoleonic times where everybody saw it coming and they had a year or a season to gather up food, gather up arms, whatever. You're either ready or you're not when it goes down. So, and that's kind of the same now with everything else that takes place so fast in our society. When Hurricane Katrina happened, when the tsunami in Japan happened, you either had the ability to get out and get away, or you didn't. And if you had to stay, you either had supplies or you didn't. There wasn't any time to go to the store and fight all the other throngs of people who were trying to buy up all the water, buy up all the food. So, there are some things that are universal. You just need to always have a little bit of everything for an emergency. But in our interconnected world, like you mentioned with the internet, one of the things that is new to preparation from days of old is communication. The level of communication you needed to preserve 100 years ago was, am I still going to be able to, ride my horse down the road to see my neighbor and buy some eggs from his chickens, But today, like you say, if we don't have an internet, if cell phones go down, how do we talk to the world? How do we call for help if we're willing to ask for it, And one of the things we did, we got into ham radio on a limited basis. It's very technical. I won't go into it all. But, a very simple thing we did is we acquired some radios which transmitted on one channel and received on another. So that if anybody happened upon your conversation on the airwaves playing around with their scanner or whatever, they only would get half the conversation. And that's if you're conversing in the open without code. And it's a very simple preparation, but that's a leg up over probably anybody else on your block. How many other people on your block who may have a gun, may have some food in the pantry, has a radio that they can even talk to anybody else who has a similar radio? There are radios out there that the more money you spend, the more you get, where you can talk to almost any radio if you're willing to spend the money. You just need to look into what has been useful tools in previous disasters of all kinds and make sure you have access to those. I mean, we were reading one website recently. We were discussing this a couple weeks ago, how a guy who lived through the war in Yugoslavia in the 90s.
That was fascinating.
He, you know, they lived on a farm. They were kind of away from all the conflict, and they figured, oh, we're going to be able to ride this out. We're just keeping unto ourselves. No one's going to bother us. But then people came along to bother them.
Because they had goodies. You guys were prepped, and he said, thank you very much. It's ours.
Yeah, and what they finally realized when they had to flee with literally nothing but the clothes on their backs, what they were concerned about then was, can we find wood to make a fire? Can we find a well that isn't poisoned so we can drink? And knowing the skills of how to determine if water is poisonous or not, where you might find it, you know, those are valuable skills. Skills may be the most valuable thing you can have to survive the future.
It was what he's talking about. It was very interesting. It was a gentleman who's going, now, all you guys prepping for all this stuff, you don't really know exactly what's coming on. I mean, you're coming across some information that is useful and it's good that you got, you know, blah, blah, blah. But he goes, let me tell you, when it comes down to it, it's going to be about breathing in and out. It's going to be about food, water, being able to defend against those that would take it from you, hiding it, being off the grid, doing it. He said a lot of times in Yugoslavia that there was, what was it, Sarajevo, I guess was the main where it was going on. He said the people, as they were being sniped, you know, all these guys were shooting them as they're going out for water. What they did is the people that were most effective at surviving were the ones that lived in apartments, and in the center courtyard, they were able to dig a well. And they had enough fuel from nearby, you know, right behind it or something with some wood, or they were dismantling parts of the apartment complex, trying to survive long enough just to hold out. And they were supplying themselves with whatever food that they had and accumulated, and then they have little parties, raiding parties, or whatever, to go out. And their whole thing was just about surviving. So I look at a lot of the survival blogs and so on. We started putting survivalblog.com or whatever that on Freedom's Phoenix Live, because there's a lot of great stuff. A lot of people send us stuff to put up, and we've been putting up a lot of their stuff. And their big thing is it kind of shifted away from, you know, the firearm aspect of it, is to just, you know, keeping your body at surviving temperature and hydrating and food.
Well, you know, along those lines, a wonderful article I read just yesterday, literally, the fellow was commenting, he runs a shooting school, and all kinds of people come and go through his school, some military, some civilian, and inevitably topics like this come up where they say, oh boy, you know, if the excrement ever hits the fan, you know, I'm heading to the mountains, get away from all the crazy people. Well, he runs a school in Southern Oregon at about 5,000 feet. And a lot of these guys who come to his school, they're from cities. And he says, listen, have you ever been to the mountains? Have you ever lived in the mountains? And I don't mean in a community with running water and all. I mean, you ever had to survive like in a log cabin? It ain't easy. And you're going to just, you know, with what you can pack on your back or in your car, take off to the mountains to live for years, you know, you're going to die. And
we're all going to die.
There's a debate right now in the survival community about, should you bug out or should you bug in? Should you stay? Should you go?
You know, we have on the front page, it's two letters regarding cattle raising basics from somebody. They're going, hey, man, what about cattle raising? You know, other things about stocking up on, you know, certain things. You know, how to get your wife on board. Think about it.
There are those that just want to be left alone and those that just won't leave them alone. Which one are you? The Ernest Hancock Show.
You gotta fight the powers that be. Got so many voices. Sit on the scene.
Yeah, so many voices. Well, you know, we're trying to be our own voice, have a voice. That's what we're working on here on Declare Your Independence. It's been an effort that's been going on for a long time, and a lot of people have tried to add theirs and be an inspiration to others that have something to contribute to. And I wanted to ask Dean, you know, to comment on being an individual that was a prepper, you know, back in the 90s and so on. Definitely he was prepared for a lot of things. Well, that made him a threat to the man. They don't want you to be prepared. You know, and I'll tell you, it was very interesting. During the Clinton administration and so on, they were having anti-hoarding laws that they wanted passed. You know, these people got too many diapers and too much and baby formula, and you're not allowed to stock up on me. I'm like, seriously? You know, and then we all have, you know, a gas line broke here in Arizona one time. They wanted to, you couldn't hoard up gasoline, or they were charging too much, you know, scalping prices, they said, and just, you know, crazy talk like this. And you're going, wow, man, I see, you know, we're going down the dark side on that one. So what we did is I wanted to ask Dean, what is it that is different now on the list of something, and what would be the same of the kinds of things that we should be accumulating, you think, in your opinion? And what are the people online saying? Because you deal with a lot of these people. They're out there talking about getting their whatever. And after they get past of whether 30-06 is better than 308, you know, when they get past that crap, you know, they're down to what they think you need.
Well, again, this debate has been going on for a long time about whether you should bug out or bug in. You know, should you try and get out of town and away from the craziness, or should you try and hole up and just wait for it all to end and be one of those who comes out afterward to rebuild? And, you know, there's arguments to be made on both sides. But what's different today is that there is a greater awareness. Let me put it this way. When the survivalist movement first started in 79 and 80, it was in a time similar to now. It was the Carter administration. The economy sucked. Everything was expensive. Inflation was going through the roof. And one of the key concerns at that time, the reason people wanted to prepare to survive, was they thought there might be an economic breakdown, a general breakdown of society, not necessarily an invasion by a foreign army or anything like that. That same original concern is coming up again now when the economy sucks, when inflation is about to explode. And so a lot of these old original ideas about what one should do to prepare are becoming popular again. You know, be able to farm, have basic skills like knowing a little bit of blacksmithing is maybe not bad, because you may not be able to go to the hardware store to buy a nut or a bolt or a tool, things like this.
Magazines like, you know, Country Living and, you know, blah, blah, blah. All these, you know, people are subscribing to. They're becoming popular. The articles are being sent to me to put up on Freedom's Phoenix. You know, I recognize these magazines from back, heck, when I was in freaking high school, you know.
Well, regarding fuel, yeah, you can look at what happens criminally to get a clue for what is the emphasis that people are concerned about when resources get scarce or they get expensive. Right now, gas is expensive. In recent years, there's been a move for people to learn how to make their own biofuel for their diesel. You make biodiesel. And you can do it a number of ways, but the most popular way is just used cooking grease. Go ahead and refine it, add a little bit of whatever the other chemical is to it, and you have a fuel.
Well, all you gotta do is filter it and just throw it in the tank.
It works a little bit better with some additives, but yeah, if your engine is set up properly, you can just run it straight. But now it's gotten to the point, I read just yesterday, people are stealing the used cooking oil at the backs of restaurants. Used to be you could go to a restaurant and say, hey, I'll help you dispose of that stuff. And it's a biohazard.
Heck, I remember my restaurant, I paid people to haul it off.
Exactly, because it's a biohazard waste product, and you know the city doesn't want it in their sewers. They'll find you if they catch you dumping it in the sewer. So there were services that popped up say, yeah, for a minimal fee, we'll take it off your hands. Well, now there's people coming to the restaurant saying, no, I'll take it for free. You know, heck, I'll even pay you a little bit to get ahead of in the line from this other guy and get it from you. Well, now people are so desperate for it, you know, they're just stealing it.
Because in a lot of restaurants, you'll see it looks like a mini dumpster out back, and it's, you know, something they'll dump or they pump out or something. And if I remember, Chris Rye and Corey, they went around the country doing interviews for the movie For Liberty, the Ron Paul Revolution, and they did it with biodiesel. They had a diesel Mercedes. They were going around, and they went all over the country for like almost nothing. You know, they had Michael Maresco with them, and I remember them going, we're just, you know, you got a restaurant around here somewhere. You know? So this is how they were fueling themselves. And so it's not like it, you know, it's something in the future. It's happening now. But the value of things, I mean, tell me about on the gun list and so on, all of these guys that are talking, What is it they're talking about? Things like silver. You know, what's their thing on the economics?
Well, there's a lot more interest in silver and gold and commodities in general, like food, than ever before. You know, I was one of the first guys on one of the local gun websites I hang out on to talk about, hey, silver is going up in price. Silver is undervalued. Maybe you might want to buy some, you know, make a little money, make some profit, have a good time. And a lot of guys, you know, they were more concerned about gun stuff. They weren't really paying attention to economics. And everybody was shy, in fact, after the housing bubble. You know, they figured, well, if prices on metals and other commodities are going up, isn't that just another bubble? I don't think I want to participate. Well, here we are now where silver is, you know, about to top $50, and everybody's going, well, maybe I should get some silver after all. Some guys already did get some years ago or only months ago, but with the sudden rise, are thinking that, okay, maybe now silver is a bubble. I disagree with that. I think it's not, but, you know, that's neither here nor there. They think it is. And suddenly, all of a sudden, on all these gun websites, you got the guys who have silver wanting to get rid of it. And there's a whole bunch of people who previously didn't get silver who are thinking, well, I think I want to buy that. And suddenly, silver is changing hands everywhere.
Or there's a lot of people know that it's still a bargain. Yeah, I'll buy your silver.
Exactly.
Moron. So it's it is going to skyrocket and bubble, and it'll have a correction, and it'll just keep going because they'll never stop printing money. I mean, until the dollar is done. And when the dollar is done, silver is going to be $11 trillion, you know, but that, you know, we may not even be using that currency anymore. One thing, a stat I had Bernard von Nothaus, the Liberty Dollar guy, on a few days ago, and he said, he goes, at the beginning of the hyperinflation in Germany in the Weimar Republic before World War II, he said it was 12 marks for an ounce of silver. By the time the hyperinflation thing was done, it was in the, I think he said, billions. 12 to billions. Mm-hmm. Zimbabwe stuff, man.
Right, right.
You know, so is the dollar going that way? I mean, are they talking about that? Is it a concern them at all?
Oh, yeah, everybody's concerned about it, you know, because gun guys, preppers, and people who prepare, who we would call survivalists, tend to be conservative in the political spectrum. You know, they tend to be Republicans or libertarians. And so, yeah, they're, by nature of that, they follow what goes on economically and they're concerned about it. You know, along those lines, what gun people specifically are concerned about is the price of ammunition and its availability. Because what a lot of people might not be aware of, unless you are a gun person, is that about a year and a half to 2 years after the war in Iraq kicked off, there was a delay in the effect of all that use of ammunition by the U.S. military and other militaries around the world. Surplus ammunition became non-existent. And when surplus ammunition became non-existent and the supply began to dwindle for civilian consumption, the prices went sky high. You used to be able to buy a particular bullet for 15 cents. Now it was going for 35. And guys who were used to budgeting a certain amount for recreational shooting to go out every weekend or every other weekend and spend $50 are now finding out they have to spend $150. And that took a while to equalize. The prices for that are now finally coming down. A lot of people are finally saying that after having experienced the absolute shortage and unavailability of some ammunition after Obama was elected and the panic that people felt over that, a lot of people are saying ammo is cheap now, get it now, because if anything ever happens again, we're going to have another shortage like after the Obama election. You won't be able to buy it no matter how much money, how much silver you have, and you'll be able to trade it like currency. Problem is, that creates another problem. If you trade your bullets to other people, and they see you've got good stuff, might they use those bullets to come back and get the rest of your stuff?
You know, the one thing we started learning to do reloading here, and Dean's helped me with that, and we've made a lot of the activists, not like a big secret, you know, everybody comes here and reloads and whatever. I said, and my deal is, I go, yeah, reload all your whatever you want to do, 1,000 something on, you know, give me 100 and, you know, and we're square, you know, just to use all the stuff. What happened is that we found out when we started doing the reloading, you couldn't get primers for a long time. And whenever you had certain components, it was bullets here, the actual bullet, the casing, you know, you would reuse a lot of that. You know, little things, you just couldn't get components. Well, now it's getting to where you can now, so it's time to stock up. Because if you don't, and you need it later, we already experienced, and it hadn't even got that bad yet, it was impossible to get. Think how impossible it's going to be when you really, really, really need it. Everybody get ready. It's all coming. If we know it's coming, then we don't have to be afraid of it. We can get ready. Uncovering the secrets and exposing the lies. That's what readers of freedomsphoenix.com get every day. Readers of freedomsphoenix.com are constantly provided the information that detail the real news between the lines of propaganda about government policies and the true relationship we all have with coercive governments. Learn the true condition of our economy, innovations and technological breakthroughs in energy, health, computer science, and space travel. Learn the truth well before it's admitted to in the lamestream media, the media that is so last century. Corporate media has evolved into nothing more than distributors of government propaganda, but we now have a fantastic alternative. FreedomsPhoenix.com provides constant news updates on the issues that affect our lives in the most important ways. Our liberty and our property are under constant attack, and FreedomsPhoenix.com provides the understanding behind the propaganda while encouraging the participation of our readers. Join us at FreedomsPhoenix.com. That's Freedoms with an S, Phoenix.com. FreedomsPhoenix.com, where the revolution between the ears has already matured. Tour.